I won't give the talk a title, but we'll see if it deserves one at the end of the talk. In a broad and general way in life, we have a natural expression and feeling for what freedom is and the ways that it can manifest. And some of us have been blessed or fortunate in our life, not all in here for sure, to have some freedoms which has allowed us to express ourselves, religious freedom, freedom to say what we wish to say, write what we wish to write, and relatively to do what we wish to do. And our forefathers and previous generations of women and men have worked tirelessly for all of us and subsequent generations to enable us to have some relative important and freedoms in life. And that certainly isn't the case for everybody, and there are people in this room who know only too well what certain kinds of regimes have done in your own countries, and the intolerance, the dark nights, the witch hunts, the stop and search, and all that pressure which impacts on human beings and can be terrifying and frightening. And certainly over the years, even in all the questionable features of so-called democratic life, still some of us feel blessed and lucky enough that we can walk the streets, we can make our protest, we can express our concern. And as an example, one of the most intolerant regimes on this earth is the neighbouring country here, Burma, which the military people now called Myanmar. And in a visit there just 2 years ago for a meeting with Aung San Suu Kyi and her cousin, who is a personal secretary and a wonderful saintly man, both of them deep and dedicated practitioners of the Dharma, of Vipassana, insight meditation practice. And owing to his love and devotion to his people, the regime arrested him and taken him away, imprisoned him, and all the brutal treatment that goes on in the lives of people who have the courage and the great inner freedom in life to express their voice. And that takes tremendous courage to do that. And such people are lovers of freedom and genuinely are brothers and sisters in that respect. So all this important and very significant and genuinely outer demonstrations of the manifestation of freedom. But though we might have those privileges, and they are accessible and available perhaps to all or most of us who are in this room, but nevertheless there is the inner life. And then with the inner life, what is the freedom? Where is it? What is its nature? What really reveals it? How do we know if we're free? How do we know inwardly if we're unfree? What are the signals and signs for all of that? And since even in our culture, as I mentioned, societies, that so much is mentioned of freedom in its outer form, but there's as yet no real deep questioning and deep investigation of what freedom is, which is spoken of by the sages of past and present, which is truly ultimate. And therefore, nothing, no event, no circumstance on this earth can ever take it away, no matter what. And that freedom ought to be a real priority, because there's no greater respect that you and I can pay to life than to realize that freedom, which is ultimate and does not fade for a single moment. And it's accessible for us. We look, and reference was made a few moments ago to suffering in life, and perhaps in all of its phases and characteristics of it, which arise, we say, of suffering, that it's the very signal of it, the very message that suffering shows, it's something which is taking place in experience which one doesn't want. That is suffering. Something is going on in one's inner life, and when we attend or look honestly at it, we say, I wish this wasn't here. I wish this wasn't like this. I wish I was free from this. This is a feature of suffering. Of course, to make a small distinguishing for a moment, bodily factors, hereditary genetic factors, the consequences of those apply to the Buddhas and others across the board. We're talking about suffering in terms of the inner life here, not physical pain as such due to accidents, due to health issues or whatever. So here is the inner life which takes place. We say this, suffering, stress and unhappiness and confusion, agitation, pain, worry, greed, selfishness, the whole spectrum and that vast repertoire of words that you and I have, that when we're caught up in this, we don't feel free. We don't feel free, and we know it because every signal that's coming out of the being says, I wish this was not here. And when we look at the motion and the movement of our life, when we're not living with awareness, we're living in a kind of blind force, and that blind force moves us along, and sometimes we cannot see the seeds we sow and the fruits that come. We can't see. And so unhappiness comes upon us. Sadness comes upon us. The weight of life comes upon us. Confusion comes upon us. And you say, well, why am I like this? How come I found myself in this position? Feeling like this, thinking like this, or whatever. And somehow we've missed all the signals, all the indicators, all the signs, subtle and gross, that have been going on in our life, and we've ignored that, and something has been pushing us and driving us along. And then the outcome is the anguish, the unhappiness, the confusion. So when we say, let's really pay attention to life, let's really be conscious of it there, it's the great source of protection for us. Not the greatest, but it's a great source of natural protection. If we're really aware and really attentive to things, we'll pick up the signals. We'll notice what the mind is doing, and when it's taking, it's wanting, it's movement, it's force, too far about anything, anywhere. If we're really noticing this movement, we'll be alert to any assumption whatsoever of continuity in life. Anything which implies continuity, if we're aware, it will set up a kind of alarm signal. We'll notice a continuity of health, a continuity of a relationship, a continuity of one's finances, a continuity of a movement, a continuity of a quality of mind state which we appreciate, or whatever. So that awareness helps and enables us to stand and say, what am I assuming will continue? Because my assumptions may be correct, maybe they will continue, but obviously in the great dynamics of nature, anything in this life can befell anyone at any time. And in that respect, the movement and the activities of nature and the way of the dynamic of this existence means, who knows for today and tomorrow, anything. So awareness, as I say, looks at things where, in this case of particularly of continuity, what do I take for granted? Who do I take for granted? What shows to me I'm taking for granted? And that habit pattern, when it an event happens and there's a collision, it's anguish, it's pain, it's, hey, it's, wake up. Hey, look, I was asleep. I didn't know I was asleep. Everything was going along all right. I thought everything was fine. I thought I was doing all right. But when we get ourselves into a mess in our life, it's a way of saying, hey, I was asleep. And I deceive myself in thinking, actually, I was awake. But it's like the suffering in all of its gross and subtle forms says, you weren't awake. If you're awake, you wouldn't be living this condition. You wouldn't be in this kind of state. You wouldn't be wrapped up in the clinging and the grasping and all the disappointments of life that go with it. That's why we say, and that's why it was said under the tree and it's said again and again, please stay awake. Stay awake. In the touch and impact of circumstances of life upon us, sometimes people coming here to Mother India, and I hear it quite regularly, it's a kind of sweet thing to say in some respects and rather unfortunate in others. But some people say when they come to India and then return back to this country, they say, oh, you know, Christopher, when I'm in India, I really feel alive. I feel I'm alive. And sometimes in the extent of this country, from the Himalayas right down to the tip of it, sometimes in a kind of, as a metaphor, as a large sense of space in one's life, for some people, it has an enlivening impact. But the enlivening impact of all that goes with it is being shaped. What by what? It's being shaped and affected by what touches our eyes and our ears, our nose, our tongue, through the senses. It stimulates the consciousness and we feel more alive, feel more awake in various ways that we can do. And so some would say, when I'm here, when I'm in India, when I have this chance, I feel more free. And when I go back to the West or where I came from, I feel the old patterns are beginning to set in and all the problems are beginning to set in. It's a feeling of being free, being awake, but it's shaped by events. Therefore it's finite. Therefore it's stoppable. Therefore it's limited. Therefore it's defined by the conditions in which the consciousness finds itself in. And we say, it's a wonderful freedom, yes. It's a relative freedom. It's a precious one to have. It's a sweet one to know and to taste. But it's not ultimate, because ultimate isn't dependent on conditions. It's unconditioned. Sometimes there's the momentary touch of freedom in life. Not saying, oh, when I was in this place I felt so free, or when I was on retreat and bringing consciousness to every moment I felt so free and receptive, but certain experiences of life, and we've been touching on these in inquiry and other times, and in the touch of that it may manifest, we feel incredibly clear, extraordinarily clear, and we want nothing for the clarity itself. And there's a sense in that clarity, there's nothing more. How could I add to it? How could I give something more? How could I get anything more? There's such a depth of clarity. And in the clarity which comes, it of course, it goes by the energy, goes by tiredness, goes by the day, goes by sleep, it goes by the daydream, it goes by old tendencies arising or whatever. And then we say, I had that time, I had those moments, I know what you're talking about, I know that taste of freedom and the clarity which it brings, but then it seems to fade. And then when it's faded, I'm just left with my memory. I'm just left with what I had. And I don't feel like that now. I know it, I tasted it, I'd love to repeat it, but I don't actually, in this moment, I don't feel that way at all. Does it mean that in some way or other I've got to find a way to try to get back to that taste which I had somewhere in my life, if one has had? And we, the teachings that the Dharma, the Buddha, has spoken beautifully and marvelously, insightfully about all of these things. And we forget the aspect of this. So if I quote the Pali for a moment, and then I'll try to communicate what the teachings state. The Pali is Jnana Bhuta Dashana. Jnana means insight. It means knowing. Dashana, Sanskrit, is darshan. You know, it works. There, of course, as time went by, the gurus completely corrupted this word, and it meant, you know, staring in their eyeballs or something. And then there's bhuta, you might say the nature of things. And there is darshan, there's the bare experience of existence. We might call it clarity, we might call it a great sense of freedom, we might call it extraordinary awareness, profound opening, all the languages that we use. And therefore it's a darshan with life, a darshan with the here and now, a darshan with existence, which is the authentic darshan of a human being and doesn't need a special form for it. And in that darshan, that experience with the now, that can touch, as I mentioned, very deeply and strongly and beautifully, but it fades. So is the teachings one of trying to reach that, it fading, and then wishing to reach it again? Or is something more important, this is to listen here, than the quality of the experience? No human being, Buddha or otherwise, can retain that quality of experience as a continuity in time. There is a view, often misunderstood in the Dharma and teaching, I have a profound moment, and if I really was centered, if I really was ego-less, that profound moment wouldn't leave me. It would always stay with me, and I'd be living a moment to moment, thoroughly clear, thoroughly awakened life, which would be confirmed again and again by the quality of my experience. I'd be so clear in what I see, in what I hear, in what I do, what I feel, what I think, my whole being. It would radiate an ongoing, unshakable clarity. Not a hope. Not for a Buddha, and not for anyone else either. It's a common misunderstanding of things. The Buddha doesn't say bhuta dashana. If he said that, he just said meaning the experience of the nature of things, and just left it at that. Because if it left at that, then one would have the right to assume in that, the teachings are pointing to an absolute clarity which can never fade away, in which the mind is fully clear about anything and everything, every single moment of existence. There's not a single scrap of evidence on this earth that any human being has ever come to that. Not a single one. And if you ever think you have met one, I will be there like a rocket on my hands and knees. And one only has to read even with the teachings of the Buddha, plenty of places and plenty of passages where one sees in the text, well, that's a perception of things, that's one way of looking at things, and sometimes in the views and perceptions expressed remarkable, phenomenal clarity, and other places where there's pretty clear signs of some lack of it. So if we're not going to be carrying this image of perfection about clarity in the way the mind conceives of it, then what is jnana? What is the knowing which is ultimate freedom and is unstoppable? What is the knowing? And sometimes in the misunderstanding of all of this, people see teachers and spiritual teachers and gurus and others and people who claim to be enlightened or claim to be liberated or with Buddha nature or whatever, and then sometimes one observes this and observes that, and if we're carrying an idea of what ultimate freedom is, of what pure clarity is, we will get messages, well, yes, no, maybe, etc., and doubts will begin to set in. If it's so easy to do that with others who we have elevated into super spiritual status, how easily one will do it with oneself. I had this extraordinary clarity, incredible sense of freedom. I didn't think it would go away, and right now what I'm experiencing is a distinct lack of clarity. So I can't possibly be free, because if I was free, I wouldn't be feeling like this. And therefore, if I'm feeling like this, that which happened to me last week, last month, last retreat, obviously couldn't have been very deep, because if it had been deep, I'd still be clear. So one goes from extraordinary clarity to an experience of being unclear. The unclearness is identified with, a fruit of it comes out, and the fruit of it is doubt about the original. Well, if I really was, then I couldn't be like this. We're carrying images of what true clarity is. Carrying images of what the significance of experience is. Still the same question abides. What is the knowing which is ultimately liberating and unstoppable? What is it that one knows? In the jnana, that's the knowledge. Important here and the features. In the experience, that is, buddha darshana, the experience, the darshan with the nature of things, which can come in the meditations, come in the listening to the Dharma, come in being in the nature, come in reflection, come spontaneously and unexpectedly, or whatever. In the experience of that, the jnana, a feature of it, is what comes out from it. One goes into the depths of silence. One is deeply absorbed into silence. Nothing asked of the world, no thingness going on. We touched on this earlier today. No thingness going on. What does it show? What is the knowing that can come from it? If a knowing doesn't come from it, it will be an experience of clarity in time, and it will fade, and one will go back to the earlier consciousness, the everyday consciousness. Why? Because something isn't realized. Something isn't seen, something, there isn't a knowing coming out of it. India, spiritual India, has said and reminded us again and again, liberated ones are jnanis, ones abiding in a knowing. What is that liberation, that freedom, which is, as the questioner asked, or said person requested, which is unstoppable? If you and I linger for memory and for the old, it shows two things are going on. One is there is clinging. There is no room in the teachings and no encouragement and no endorsement whatsoever for clinging to anything. And sometimes, and I've said a few times in this hall as well as other parts of the world, some people who have had profound experiences, very, very deep experiences, there are cases, and there are a number of them, where I would say it's better that it never happened. Because what came out of it was not knowing, what emerged out of it was clinging. And in the clinging to the old, nothing then compared with it. How could it? One can't even know what was clearly, because the clinging is colouring it, distorting it, making a mess of it. And in the clinging to the old, we look at the present through the eyes of the past. I've never had an experience like that again. I had that, it was just incredible, and this is just insignificant, it's not the same, and I really want to get back to that which I had before. All the voices and thoughts of clinging going on, and when there's clinging going on, that is the fruit of that experience. Not liberation. It's a mind which is holding. And how can the holding to the old be liberating? It's impossible. Impossible. Sometimes you might be listening and you think, well, he keeps talking about clarity. And from what it sounds like as I listen, I can't even say I've ever had a moment clarity in my life. Maybe those who've been sitting either side of me for these 10 days or whatever, 8 days or whatever it is, have, but outside of my field. So sometimes we look and we listen, and in looking and listening, do we have to have, this, in this case with the past, any profound sense of clarity, any deep silence, any truly deep state of peace and contentment? Do we have to have had that? And if, as I said earlier, the having of it has left more problems than it's worth, then some of you can be truly grateful here and now that you haven't had a moment of clarity in your life, because you know if you did, there would only be grasping and it would make a torment of the rest of your existence. So in the perceiving of, we can be seriously grateful for such experiences, and we can be equally seriously grateful for not having them, because of the tendency of human being to anything which remotely feels special to be grasped. Anything remotely special to be grasped. What is this knowing? What is this unstoppable freedom? When we look to the present, forgetting the past, what we had or what we haven't had or whatever, it's, as I said, it's all irrelevant, it's dead, it's history, it's all belongs to the forgettable. That when we look to the present, what is it that's going on with us which has in the perception and in the sense of I and self a very strong view repeated inwardly and outwardly? There is something obstructing. If we're not free, then you say, well, why am I not free? And then we say, what is it that stops unstoppable freedom? What is it that seems to have such a power, such a force of its own, that it either stops me from ever having any sense of freedom at all, or it comes in and my short-lived freedom is quickly taken away because something else seems to have a power, an authority, to take away this unstoppable freedom. What is it? What actually is it? And I believe that, I hear that, I speak of the language of suffering, I speak of the whoever the I is, I speak of the language of hindrances and blocks and obstacles, I speak of the problem of mind and body, people and environments and situations and all of that. And I have given it an extraordinary authority over consciousness. Extraordinary authority which I am thoroughly convinced that it blocks freedom. That it's got some kind of inherent reality to it. It's impacting from the outside or impacting from inside, and it's so real, it affects me so much, it's really stopping my freedom. And if I can't know an unstoppable freedom because I believe there are things which really, really stop it. And I live in this mythology. I live in it. And I can't imagine it being otherwise, because I keep getting the confirmation through my feelings and my thoughts and my states of mind. Nothing else can do it. Not another state of mind. Not being in a particular place called India or elsewhere. Not being on a retreat or being out of a retreat. Not being in a meditation or being out of meditation. None of that has any inherent power. It's just as we know what it is. So when I actually come down to the bareness of existence, somehow or other I'm completely convinced what takes place in what is called states of mind have an inherent power to stop freedom. Why do I feel that? Why do I think that? Why do I accept that? Why do I support that? What on earth would be the point of giving it that kind of magnitude of significance? What would I want to do that to myself for? That an unstoppable freedom is there in one's true nature, and what I seem to know is what I believe is which what is in front of me, my state of mind is in front of me, what is in front of me has some real significance. Then one spends half of one's life or a percentage of one's life trying to reduce its significance, trying to clear the cobwebs out of one's consciousness or whatever, really believing that the clouds passing by stop the sun from shining, stop the sun from expressing its own nature. Extraordinary misperception, misunderstanding, confusion that human beings find ourselves, themselves, or whatever in. Does it really do that? There might be some moments when there's a whole personal storyline going on. So? There's a whole personal storyline going on. So? there's a mood in the mind. It's moody. So, there's some uncertainty. Shall I, shan't I? This or that? So, one is feeling negative about this, that, and the other. So, what manifests, what keeps showing itself, keeps being confirmed again and again that its own fading and dissolution doesn't really say anything about anything. If the state of mind had the potency to stay, and it stayed once and for all, and there was not a drop of hope that it would fade, then we would say, boy, human beings have a real problem. We have the problem of a state of mind which never changes. The state of mind which never goes. Some of you after 8 days may already have this, but it will go. So in the very nature, in the very arising, there is movement, activity, appearance, disappearance, fading. If it's just going on and revealed in its own extraordinary way, and one can't say, right, I will have this mind state for today, because the mind will say, just you wait and see. But in the range, the variety, the spectrum of human condition, of states of mind and all of that, who would want to say in its movement, in its evolution, in its manifestation, in its dropping and fading and dissolving and becoming something else, who would want to say, well, that really stops freedom? Actually, it's a pointer to it. Life is so free, it allows it. If life wasn't free, things would be stuck forever. Our very inner life is not the block to freedom. It's its revelation. And it's unstoppable. It's something that goes on in the psyche, the way we look. We've got a kind of viewpoint. I must get rid of this, get past this, dissolve this, negate this, overcome this, finish with this, and when I finish with this, then I'll go to freedom. And one is in the terrible paradox that I say the condition for the unconditioned is getting rid of this. And that's what we're saying. The condition to realize liberation, which is the unconditioned, is to get rid of something. Life is every pole, the sheer magnificence of the diversity of it all. All the extraordinary range of what it is the living, tangible, immediate confirmation of ultimate freedom. And we are it. And we can know it. We can know it. And it's wonderful. And therefore, whether we have a very deep, deep experience, as I referred to earlier on, or whether we don't, is not the issue. The Buddha made that ultimately, absolutely clear under the tree. And therefore, an extraordinary way, the sense of knowing that even when the things of life arise, we may say, oh, it's unwelcome or unwanted or whatever. It's just, that's all it is. It's unwelcome and unwanted. By what? By means of comparing with something else, obviously. By means of looking at it in relationship to some other event of life. It's unwelcome and unwanted. But it's not unwelcome and unwanted of itself. How could it be? How could it be? doesn't come up in the mind, doesn't come up and say, I am unwelcome and unwanted. There's no inherentness to it. And one is, even in the extraordinariness of all this, one says, huh, all what ultimate freedom, of unstoppable freedom, whatever way we might like to speak, it makes everything possible. Everything. That is what freedom is. It makes all things possible. And this, knowing of this, can be so obvious that the unclearness in the mind is its demonstration. The personal story running through is its confirmation. The agitations which go on is its proof. And this is what is meant by the darshan with the nature of things which knows. It knows. And we have this, as I say, wonderful chance. And out of that, when the unpleasant and the unwelcome, as it were, appears, and when the thought comes, oh, it stops me from freedom, it stops me from this great clarity, it stops me from knowing the unstoppable, or whatever it might be, there is a natural outflow from the being which says, let's work with this. Let's attend to this. Let's take interest in all of this. The mind is not in that obsessive, I must get rid of mode. It's just interested in all this. What it is to feel a mood. What it is to experience thoughts. It's a wonderful thing that we can be clear. If we understand this true knowing of unstoppable freedom, we can be clear that we're unclear. We can be clear that we're confused. One can say, I'm feeling incredibly confused, I'm feeling incredibly unclear. And we can be extraordinarily clear about it. Therefore, we don't have to have a very deep and special experience for liberation. There is a knowing, jnana, pitta, dashana, seeing, the knowing, the experience, the darshan of the here and now, and everything reveals unstoppable freedom. And that wonderful message came out from the Buddha and spoke so tirelessly and with such love and passion to each and every human being that this is available. This is available. May all beings see into the nature of existence. May all beings understand the nature of clarity. May all beings abide with this unstoppable freedom. Let's have a couple of quiet minutes together, please.